Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And my very special guest today is none other than Passio. Now, I'm not sure, for those of you on the radio audience, you can't actually tell, but in New Zealand, there's this Passio brand of toilet paper, and I think that's very apt. Big, we got a 12-pack, and because Passio wipes out the bullshit, ladies and gentlemen, that's absolutely true. Wipe that bull's nasty old ass, knock his horns off, and put that steak down on the thing. That's how I like my truth, ladies and gentlemen, straight between the eyes. Now, I'll give a rudimentary introduction. Don't judge what somebody looks like. Don't judge what you think they sound like. Don't judge the entire idea before you've heard it through to its entire conclusion. Don't try and react. Just sit. Just listen. You will learn better this way and get fuller, more comprehensive understandings of the people who are talking. Unless they're social justice warriors or something, case in which case ignoring them off the bat kind of seems appropriate, and or doing analytical pieces in long form where you understand and break down all of the things that they're doing wrong. Okay, it's just, this is how the human race evolves, ladies and gentlemen. You get people who are doing things right, and they show you what you're doing wrong, so that you don't continue to be wrong. All right? Being immoral, having a short attention span, and being a dick is wrong, okay? Don't do it. That's the lesson here. Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show after so many years.
Vinnie, thank you so much for bringing me back onto the show. It's a pleasure to be here as always.
Now, the title of the show is Doing the Shadow Work. Over the summer in New Zealand here, a couple of months that I was taking off, I watched a bunch of your presentations, some of the old ones from Jason Burmes, Luke Rutkowski, James Corbett, and Rosa Corey, and a lot of like big names of people that I was watching about 10 years ago when I started doing all this. You started about 10 years ago as well. Max Egan did, Corbett did, and a lot of us did. And we've all stayed true to what we're doing. And that's why the establishment hasn't picked us up and loved us into stardom because that's not what we want, because all of that stuff is controlled by the dark occultists and sorcerers and what have you. So if you just want to stay true, you want to stay around good people, and you want to live a moral life, you need to understand two very important principles of chivalry: that of being the meek gentleman and the brutal warrior.
That's exactly right. I mean, I couldn't have said that better myself, because we have to unite those two aspects of our personality. You know, we have to do no harm, but take no crap either. You know, it's like so many people have half of those equations, you know, where they're nice, but they're too nice up to a point, because they won't defend themselves if they're confronted with violence and you know, taking of their rights and freedom. And then there are people on the other side that, you know, just have too much of a truly, you know, overly inflated masculine side of the personality, where they'll just say, you know, I'll do whatever harm to anybody as long as I benefit or profit from it. And, you know, that's a state of imbalance as well. So the best place to be from a true spiritual perspective is to have a balance of those two sides, where we understand both the non-aggression principle of do no harm to other sentient beings, and the masculine self-defense principle of when you are accosted by violence, you have the right to defend yourself.
I thought about it in a kind of consequence. Okay, in the Constitution, it was, or something of that nature, it was life, liberty, and property. Everybody thought it was life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. What the hell does the pursuit of happiness mean if you can't have your own property?
Right? That's,
you
know,
that's the kind of thing. So they subvert all the mannerisms, and it means that everything that people talk about, unless there's a real world consequence to it, a real world application, it kind of loses its point to me. Like, why are we discussing this? Is there a point to this? You know, have you ever come to that point in a conversation where somebody's going, oh, dun, 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 they're just going on and on and on and on. Hold on a second. Where's the practical application here? Right. And that's what I like about the basic natural law principles, because it's quite simple. You can't take that which does not belong to you. And if somebody tries, they have abdicated their rights to not have anything taken off them. Somebody tries to take your life, you have the right to take theirs off them. All right. Somebody tries to take your stuff, you have the right to take theirs off them. You know, that's kind of thing. If you try to violate those laws, then there must be repercussions. And we live in a world right now how the monopoly of force is given to government so that the repercussions of using defensive force against the authorities and what have you is a no-win scenario. You're going to get yourself killed, or death by cop, or whatever the term is. So at the moment, it's not a hot war, and we endeavour to stop it from becoming that in the first place, but at the same time, it always must be left on the table. But
that's right.
The title of the work today is Shadow Work. How do we know the darkness within ourselves so that we don't become the darkness that we fight against?
That's very powerful, because that's also a very fine line that people who are attempting to discover the truth and then communicate it must walk. You know, we can't become the monsters that we're fighting against, you know, and part of this work is really the main part of it is being honest with ourselves about where we are at spiritually, where we are at mentally, where we are at emotionally. And that's really the beginning of the work upon ourselves, is to be honest with where we are actually at. So few people don't even, they don't start the work because they don't start there. They don't start with an honest appraisal and assessment of self. Because if you don't know where you're at, it's very difficult to set a coordinate, you know, system to where you want, where you say you want to be or where you want to go. So we have to start by gauging exactly where we are at in our own consciousness. And the problem with that, Vinny, is many people don't want to look at that. They don't want to look squarely into the mirror and engage what they see there. Okay, a lot of people are very afraid of that, and a lot of people are very loath to do that type of personal introspection, mm-hmm. because that's what this work is really about. The beginning of the great work, before you turn it into the rhetoric stage of actually then spreading the information that you have come to be aware of, is that you have to do a lot of personal work upon yourself first. And you know, when you tell people that that's like harder than, you know, just shouting at the top of the mountain about whatever conspiracy theories you think you deeply understand, you know, they don't really like hearing that that's what has to change. They want to always point the finger external to the self and say, no, it's that group of people over there that we have to go and get, or it's that group of people over there that we have to stop. But you know, when you tell them, no, the finger has to be turned around and has to be squarely aimed at the self, and you have to ask yourself, what am I doing that is contributing to all of this harm? Okay. And you have to say, you know, is my thought process in alignment with truth, first of all? Do I understand true objective morality? Do I even accept the idea that there is a true and objective morality that is independent of my perceptions? See, that this is part of the problem with where people haven't even begun. They haven't even gotten to the point where they understand there is such a thing as right and wrong, independent of what any human being thinks of it. And that's a very, very powerful statement to give people the information that more people do not agree with that than do. More people believe that there is only subjective right and wrong, and human beings get to make up what those values are. Okay, what those principles are, you know, that we can be the arbiters of right and wrong. And that is the ideology known as moral relativism. And I've done now probably about four or five independent social experiments regarding how many people in our society are morally relativistic. In other words, they are moral relativists and believe that mankind gets to make up what rights are or what wrongs are, versus moral objectivists who understand that since actions exist in the realm of nature, they exist in the 3D physical domain, then the characteristics of those actions must also exist in the 3D domain and not in the constructural realm of thought, okay, as moral relativists believe that right and wrong exist in subjective realm, okay? So since the action is based in nature, when we take an action, we're doing it in the body to someone or something else, okay? And then that the characteristics of that behavior are also extant, they exist in the 3D reality called nature, okay? So that's really where the term natural law comes from. The laws that govern the consequences of our behavior are based in the realm of nature. They're not constructural ideas, okay? So we don't get to make them up. We don't get to subjectively say, I think this is right and wrong, or this government thinks that this is what's right and wrong. That's moral relativism. Now, I've done, as I said, about four or five different independent social experiments where we asked a wide variety of people from all different walks of life how many people believe that right and wrong exist subjectively in the human mind, and we get to decide what right and wrong are, versus how many people think that right and wrong exist independently of human perception in the realm of nature, and they are objective and can be known independently and objectively from our perceptions of whatever we happen to feel or think or what our whims are at any given time. And every single time I've done these social experiments, unwaveringly, unfailingly, the results have been almost identical. And about two-thirds of people in the world are moral relativists, staunch moral relativists, and are convinced that they are correct and that morality is a matter of subjective opinion. And about only one-third, or about 33% approximately, a little over 30%, accept the truth, the reality, that right and wrong are objective principles in nature, in the 3D reality in which we live, and can never be separated from that, and they are always going to be independent of our perceptions, whatever our perceptions happen to be. And that's a stunningly frightening figure. That is a stunningly frightening result that I keep getting over and over, no matter where I do it, no matter what group of people are selected, okay, the results come back almost unwaveringly the same. Approximately 66% of people, 67% are moral relativists, and the other one-third are approximately are moral objectivists and understand that right and wrong exist in the natural realm, and we have to come to understand them and align our perceptions to that objective truth of the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. And that's the reason, the very reason, Vinny and Vinny's listening audience out there, the very reason that humanity is enslaved, that is the very reason, because we don't even understand that there's an objective right or wrong, okay? We don't believe or want to accept that, let alone have we even started true alignment of our behavior with those objective principles.
Or at least one-third of the population believe that. And this is the thing, because I've been torn between people's critical analysis of it, and I was thinking about what Jordan Peterson said about multivariance analysis and how bigger a picture it gives you. You know, like if you were able to do, instead of questions and answers and people walking in the street, if you were able to define, you know, what their ages are, what their level of education is, and had they had traumas in their past life, had they had no mother in their home, had they had this, that, and the other, and you get all these variables and lined up, and it gives you a much clearer picture of where humanity's at and how it really got where it is, that kind of thing. That's what I like about multivariance analysis rather than the man on the street kind of thing, because it's about an area. Now, also, in America, it's been bred to be very insular And I think the elite have done this on purpose to get Americans detached from the rest of the world. Now, I can understand objectively that when you're talking about America and the concept of overthrowing the British Empire, instituting freedom, right to private property, and these kind of things, these are instrumental in terms of human freedom. However, they're not necessarily unique. But at this point in history, the biggest bastion of what remains of human freedom technically is the United States, even though simultaneously that bastion of freedom is being bastardized and being used to take freedoms off of the people of the United States and the people of the world. So it's such a conundrum. And the whole concept of aggregating everything and going, oh, everybody thinks this or everybody thinks that, or the one, my pet peeve is people who go, oh, the awakening is happening. I've got this really encouraging signs. And see, have you seen the news, bro, of all the technotronic weaponry that's coming out that's able to control the human mind, embedded in the 5G frequencies to make you docile, angry, or despondent, or suicidal, or anything like that? Once that shit's installed, they could just flick a switch while you argue about the concepts here. All right, so my point is here is that there is real world stuff that goes on while we figure it out. And sometimes things move so fast that we get left behind entirely. And I think the same thing that's happening on the technological front is happening on the moral and ethical front, where morals and ethics have been undermined so systematically, so slowly, though, over a long period of time, that not only has morality almost getting to the point where it's vanishing, but it's getting to the point where people don't even know what it is. They don't even recognize it when they see it anymore. Like, what's that guy doing? He's like standing up in front of a courthouse and yelling out stuff about judges being corrupt. And I just don't understand, you know, that kind of thing. So far removed from reality the masses have become, that to blindly accept that we're winning and we're over the hill, or any of these positive platitudes, I think really neglect the real valor and bravery that is actually required of men specifically, but women as well, in order to face this overwhelming threat in all its various facets.
I mean, I completely agree with just about everything you just said there, including the vanishing morality in our population. I mean, I just, was looking at some social media threads the other day, and people, a friend of mine in one of the groups or something was asking, what would people really like to see happen in the world? What do you think is the thing that really has to occur in our world that we need to understand or do more than anything else? And there was every range of response that you could possibly imagine. There was, shut down the Federal Reserve System. There was have a total police accountability. There was get politicians that are corrupt out of office. There was arrest the pedophiles. I mean, you could go into a million different areas of where people thought the solution actually lies. But there wasn't one person in this thread of literally hundreds of people who were answering this question and giving their take on what should happen. Not one person said that humanity as a whole needs to truly learn, understand, and live according to natural law, meaning that they need to understand and learn and live according to the objective difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. Take that knowledge into their mind and heart and then live it and put it into practical application in the world by not violating the rights of others. Not one individual in the entire thread had that as a solution, proposed that as a solution. And this is, again, where I find that my work is drastically, overwhelmingly different than other people's, because it's this concept, I feel, and a lot of people will take exception to what I'm about to say and say I'm arrogant for saying it, and it doesn't bother me in the slightest. I mean, I am not arrogant because I say that I understand something that happens to be true. It's just a statement of fact, okay? The solutions that I propose regarding morality are the solutions to the human condition of slavery, not because I say so, not because it happens to be the work that I am teaching and putting out there to people. Okay, this would be like saying, because I say that if you drop something off of a high building, it will fall with the acceleration of approximately 9.8 meters per second per second, that is my opinion.
That's so arrogant,
that because
Mark.
I said it, that makes it true. You know,
it's so arrogant, Mark. You know, what if the ball decided it didn't want to go by gravity's, you know, patriarchal rule?
Yeah. See, this is really the bigger failing of our society, is that people actually don't believe in objective truth, and they think everything is a matter of subjective opinion. You know, whether you like chocolate or vanilla or strawberry ice cream or any other variant, you know, is a matter of subjective opinion. It's taste, it's like and dislike, it's preference, okay? But when it comes to objective truth about the laws of nature, okay, and about the difference between right and wrong, these are not matters of opinion. So then people think like, oh, you're trying to get everybody to think like you. No, getting people to understand how a law in the universe works is not trying to get people to think like me. Okay, just because I happen to understand how that law works does not mean that I invented it, that, you know, I quote discovered it. It's always been there. The understanding of it is the problem. That's what's being held back from humanity because of our religious mindset. The religious mindset of humanity. And when I say that, I don't necessarily just mean cultural religions like Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, etc. Religion is a hardened, rigid thought process that is erroneous, that is not true, that is based upon false, fundamental axioms of belief, underlying belief systems, okay, is what an axiom is, that then the person holds on to and desperately clings to because they are afraid of considering the alternatives, okay, that then what doing that does, what believing in that rigid and yet false belief does, is it holds us back from progress toward where we say we want to go individually and as a society. And that is what religion is designed to do. That's what any religion. Now, the belief in authority is a religion. The belief in government, the legitimacy of government morally, is a religion. Okay, I would claim that the monetary systems that we all use are forms of religion. Okay, but moreover, the moral relativism and the in general relativism and subjectivism that is about actual knowable truths about our reality in which we live is a form of religion. When you believe that either that cannot be known or it's all subjective, that's what holds us back from understanding real truth.
If I may, I wouldn't say it's a sure. religion. I would say it's simply a cult.
It goes beyond religion. Yeah.
Well, I mean, religion coming from the Latin religio, meaning a state of being higher to a divine being. But in actual fact, they've changed the meaning of it to religare, which means being relegated and being somewhat retarded. That's what religion means today.
Sure. Yeah, relegare means to hold back or to thwart from forward progress in Latin. You know, in the original context, you could see it in a positive light. It meant to reunite with, and to bind together to make stronger. Okay, and what we should be doing is making the truth about our reality and the laws of nature our religion, the discovery of that truth, because that is what binds us to a higher modality of consciousness. That's what will reunite us with source and higher self and higher states of awareness.
Mm-hmm. And this whole concept, I think, behind higher states of awareness, meditation, and that kind of thing, that's what I wanted to talk about. Hypocrites. All right. There's a difference between those who read their Bible, follow the moral stories and the anarchic principles and the teachings of the Christos, the anointed one.
Right.
All right. And those who simply don't read at all and just go to church every Sunday and get told what to believe while the pastor himself works for the FBI in the pastor program and they preach Romans 13, that government comes from God. You know, and you shouldn't resist it. You should just lay down and take it. All right. So the difference, ladies and gentlemen, therein between a Christian and a hypocrite. Why do you think Christians are being so heavily persecuted? Because they're the one group of people who wouldn't stand for a new world order. Real Christians wouldn't.
That's right. And that's why we have to understand the difference between true esoteric Christianity, which is the heart of the matter, the core teachings of truth, the core teachings of the how the golden rule really should be applied in our lives. And that's all about right versus wrong, you know. And we should take the church trappings and throw them where they belong in the trash can, because this is a control-based institution and it's not run by holy people. It is run by pedophiles and pedophile protectors, you know. And, you know, I did a whole entire seminar on this. I called it fake-ass Christians, but I like your name, Hippo-Christians. It's very apropos. So, you know, we have to understand the difference between there are true esoteric variants of the core teachings of a religion versus what the religion has been diluted into being accepted as by the wide variety of people in the exoteric sense, I should say, which means that's the trappings that are just given to the masses of people so that they don't really understand the core truths.
And the Illuminati, I've been saying this on my shows a lot lately, is that the original documents of the Illuminati, as it was being carried from the Bavarian hive of these scum, he got struck by lightning and toppled off his horse and died. And so these people that found the body, they opened up these documents and they found all this conspiracy and all these really powerful names of all these aristocrats and everything. And they're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what the... And even then, when this conspiracy was still in its infancy, those families had the power to shut down all the investigations and everything that would bring them to justice. And here's how they did it. Contained within that document was one play, pretty much, that has ruled humanity since 1776. If your scam gets exposed or given a name, go underground, change the name, come back, continue the scam. Oh, I don't like Bush. He invaded Iraq. I want it Clinton. I want Clinton. Yeah, yeah. Wait a second. I don't like Clinton. He invaded Kosovo. I want Bush. Yes, I want Bush. Wait, I don't like Bush. He invaded Iraq. I want Obama. I want Obama. Wait, I don't like Obama. He used more drones than Bush. I want Trump. I want Trump. And then sooner or later, be like, oh, I don't want Trump. He invaded Syria. I want whoever the fuck. Whoever the fuck. Change the name of the scam and keep scamming them.
And you're getting the same dominator with a different mask. That's all it is. The same enslaver with a different mask, you know? Because they're voting in the system. They're loyal to the system of the belief in authority. It doesn't matter who's in there. There shouldn't be any authority over people. You know, the only authority should be moral authority, is the understanding of the difference between right and wrong and the laws of consequence, which are natural law. That's what we're already experiencing. We already live in that state. You can't not live in that state. It's impossible to escape that as long as you're in the 3D realm.
The left are beating us in the power game because they've tried to capture the moral high ground. And the reason why people like you and I and the people who listen to broadcasts like ours exists is we need to retake that ground.
No, I don't think we've ever really lost it. I mean, it's like they're just tooting their horns as people who are like care more about people and are so empathetic. But really, when it comes down to, all they ever really want to do is use the force of government to implement their opinions. That's it. We don't want that state of coercion. We want a state of true voluntary cooperation between people on moral grounds. That's all I've ever advocated. I want the elimination of violence, but I want it done by people who understand what morality is and also understand that we have a right to defend ourselves when violence is done unto us by other people. If somebody's doing violence unto you and you respond with self-defensive use of physical force, you're not responding with a wrong. You are responding with something that you have a right to do because someone violated your rights in performing the initial act of aggression. And too few people understand that distinction. They don't have the discernment to understand the distinction, the true moral distinction between violence versus the defensive use of physical force.
Mm. It's that objectivity kind of thing. Schadenfreude, really. It's funny when somebody else breaks their arm, but if I break my arm, oh, that sucks or whatever. Okay, right. That's introspection, ladies and gentlemen. In some cases, it can be funny if it happens to other people, but if you've got empathy, you've got introspection, you realize that somebody else breaking their arm, you've got to help them and that kind of thing. And it reminds me of the scene in The Neverending Story where the final gate that Atreyu has to pass is the magic mirror gate. And the little guy tells him that you have to face yourself. And Atreyu goes, "What? So what? That won't be too hard." And he goes, "That's what everyone thinks. But kind men discover that they are really cruel." You know, when faced with their true selves, most men run away screaming. And it's just like that, bro. I've cried. I have screamed into the wind. I have felt darkness inside me that I felt will never leave unless I change the world around me. That's how horrible I have felt. And that is why I do what I do. Just like a drug addict who wants to get his next fixed so that he doesn't start getting the withdrawal symptoms, I don't want to withdraw on being alive and being free. All right?
Right.
I don't really think that that's a drug I think is worth giving up. Ever. All right? Quitting is for losers.
See, what you just said there about that fear of looking at the true inner aspects of self, that's what makes people just live their entire lives trying to avoid that process. You know, they'll do anything to be entertained. They'll do anything to take up time to do things that, like in the physical realm, that requires a lot of work and, you know, usage of their hands and applying their minds to something in the physical world instead of actually being quiet and alone with the self. Most people will do anything to avoid that. I think a study was actually just done recently at a couple of different universities where they were looking at like what people would do to actually avoid sitting quietly with themselves. And this is a very interesting anecdote connected to what we're talking about here. It was shown that only a very small percentage of the people that conducted the experiment were comfortable actually sitting quietly in a room with nothing else to do, no reading material, nothing to watch, no cell phone, nothing like that, not talking to anyone else, just sitting comfortably in a room with their own thoughts. It was something like less than 5% of people, you know, were really comfortable with that. And they showed that about 50 to 60%, they actually gave them one item, and it was something that they could actually apply a small electrical shock to themselves with the item. And the vast majority of people in the experiment, if I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think it was over 65%, would rather shock themselves with a small electric prodding instrument than sit quietly in a room with themselves just to do something and feel something that would let them avoid their own thoughts.
Well,
could
they
you
are literally,
imagine?
They're literally Pavlov's dogs now. So they've been programmed from birth that never to look inside, only look at a screen. And so now when you put them in a thing with an electric shock and telling you to get out, they'll just sit there and take the electric shocks. It's literally Pavlov's dogs.
I think one person actually shocked himself something like 190 times while he was sitting in the room in the experiment, as far as if I remember the numbers correctly. It's amazing that this is where humanity is at. This is how much we fear doing any personal introspection. So when we talk about the shadow work that's going to be necessary for us to really confront who we are and who we have become, if we really want to turn the human situation around, the human condition around, and get ourselves out of the slavery that we have imposed upon ourselves, you have to realize how far away from even the desire to want to do that work most people are. Most people would probably, I would go so far as to say, commit murder or suicide to avoid it. That is how fearful we are. We are more fearful of ourselves, of looking at who we have become, than we are of death. And, you know, there's some people that have gauged states of consciousness in general. And I believe David Hawkins, who wrote the book Power Versus Force, it was an individual whose work I looked at and looked into years ago and still do to a certain extent. And he talked about that there was only one state of consciousness that you could exist in the physical domain while you are still physically alive in the 3D reality that was higher than death. It was one stage above just not being alive anymore. And then it goes all the way up to, like, you know, pure, you know, spiritual, high level spiritual consciousness and just a very high state of love energy, et cetera, you know, unconditional love, et cetera. Yeah. You know, but the very lowest one before physically dying, okay, that you could get to, that is the hardest to come out of, is the state of consciousness that Hawkins referred to as shame consciousness, okay? It is beyond fear consciousness. It is shame consciousness. And the consciousness of shame is one in which the individual has already subconsciously, and maybe somewhat at a conscious level, but certainly at the subconscious level, has recognized their failure in morality and their failure in leading a positive life that would be beneficial to themselves and others and create a world based in freedom and voluntary cooperation. In other words, fulfillment and a higher level of spiritual life, okay? Most people recognize so fully, at least at a subconscious level, that they have not even begun in any way doing that work, that what they are basically doing by living in the state of shame-based consciousness is they are beating up upon themselves, and they are subconsciously, continuously telling themselves, I'm unworthy, I'm bad, I'm worthless, I deserve what's happening to me, I deserve what's going to happen to me that's going to be bad and negative. And that's where most of our society is at. See, this is part of looking in that mirror. Looking in the mirror doesn't just mean looking at ourselves. It also means being honest about the state that humanity is in and the state that the world is in, and as far as the quote-unquote external reality goes that is around us, our living conditions. But this is all a reflection of the internal reality that all of the individuals that comprise society in the aggregate, the state of consciousness that they are in. And that is the state of consciousness, I would say, more people than we would be comfortable believing actually dwell in on a daily basis. And until they acknowledge this and then say, there is something that can be done about it, I can look to others who have gotten themselves out of this condition. I can look to others who have led a life that is more in keeping with higher level values, okay, instead of the selfish mindset that most people dwell in all day, every day, thinking about nothing else but me, 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 okay, which is what Satanism really is. That's the religion of Satanism. You know, people think Satanism is worshiping the Christian variant of the devil and dressing in robes and conducting all these crazy rituals. That's not what Satanism really is, folks. You want to believe that, you go ahead and keep believing it, okay? But what Satanism really is a religious belief system that holds us back in consciousness because all we are focused on is self-gratification all day, every day. Just, I don't care about anybody else. All I care about is myself, and all I care about is what is I'm going to try to do to make myself more comfortable and happy from a selfish point of view. That's what Satanism really is. Whether anybody accepts that's what it is or not, I'm explaining to you from a perspective of having been in my past on the inside of this religion at a very low level as far as the hierarchy goes, but at a deep level as far as the ideology of it goes, a very deep level, okay? Because I don't skirt the periphery of anything. If I go into something, I'm going into it deeply, okay? And I'm going to exhaust
Listen up, ladies.
I'm going to learn everything that I can about it and really, you know, dive into it as deeply as possible. So that's what I did when I was involved in the dark occult. And I'm trying to explain to people that this is what Satanism is and always has been. You know, and we have to get out of our minds this Hollywood definition, this Hollywoodized variant of what Satanism is.
The Satanism and witchcraft and all of that kind of stuff is actually becoming very popular. It's actually becoming mainstream. They got witches on TV shows and all of this other kind of stuff. Truthstream Media did this wonderful video called Are We Being Initiated? And one of these warlock or whatever he was calling himself, he says, Satanism is actually just a love affair with the self. And I go, what's the textbook definition of frickin' dangerous malignant narcissism? Ah! A love affair with the self. It's the reason why the concept of narcissus even exists.
I saw that video that you're referring to, Vinny, and I thought it was pretty well done. The only problem is that they think that initiation into the occult is only a bad thing. And there are two forms of initiation into the occult. There is initiation into the world of dark occultism, which is all about service to self and all about self ego gratification, etc. Okay, not caring about others, not caring about rights, not caring about freedom. Okay, and then there is a form of occult initiation that attempts to teach people natural law, that because that is occulted knowledge, that is knowledge that has been hidden from the every person, you know, hidden from just the average human being. And we're never going to level the playing field unless we are initiated into that type of occult knowledge, which is all about how the human psyche really works, okay, the type of work that we do need to do upon ourselves to change who we are inside of ourselves, the understanding of covert mind control techniques, which are mental manipulation techniques, you know, understanding how they work is to shield yourself against them. Okay, so that kind of occult initiation, and now, of course, the ultimate occult knowledge is natural law, how the laws of consequence work when we basically perform behaviors that are either in harmony with the laws of right and wrong, or whether they are in opposition to the laws of right and wrong. And when they're in harmony with them, we're going to build a society based on peace, harmony, order, freedom, self, individualism, personal responsibility, etc. And when we live against the rules of right and wrong, we're going to build a society in the aggregate that is based on chaos and disorder and hatred and, you know, slavery. It's going to be, we're going to have a society that is enslaved. Yeah. That's how it works. And the decision is ours. But see, the knowledge we should be being initiated into. We need a positive occult initiation, and there is such a thing.
I'll let you get into the thing. What's his name? James Wright and Fader Rex. A lot of these high-level Freemasons that have come out and blown the whistle on all of these initiation ceremonies and occult practices and things of that nature on the Negatory from a co-opted version of Freemasonry known as the Scottish Rite, essentially. And a thought has always occurred to me, and I've never even floated it with them, but what if a new occult society needed to, in fact, be created in order to oppose the current one, that kind of thing? What would its doctrines be? What would its initiation ceremonies be? How could you take the young men of today with a lack of morality and through a tier worthy of systems across a 10,000-hour series of internship, essentially, you create a moral man, a knight?
That's right. That's what Freemasonry is supposed to be. You know, that's what all occult initiatory traditions are supposed to do. Okay. The problem is the people who are actually doing that real great work are scattered to the four winds of the earth. And the traditions that were supposed to uphold that initiatory process are degraded in humanity, and they're not really doing those things that they should have been doing all along. They are co-opted, they are overtaken by people who have this satanic mindset of I'm going to only serve myself and my ends, okay, the goals that I set forward that I want to see happen for myself and for society, and they're not based on anything that is based in actual, real, objective morality. And that's see, when you say maybe we need to have that a new occult type of society or that initiatory tradition, I feel that it already exists. It's already out there. It's the people like us who are actually talking about morality in a wide way to an audience of thousands of people that are trying to get them built up, get them to do the shadow work that they need to do upon their subconscious and conscious minds, get themselves in a good state of health and awareness, and then teach that to others. We are building a low-level initiatory tradition regarding what real morality is, which is what natural law is all about, and we are encouraging other people to go out and spread that word and put those teachings out there for other people. And people have to understand, that's not a religion. This is a science. See, that's the difference between the way people looked at any kind of quote-unquote mystical traditions of old versus what we are coming to understand now, which is a bridge or a unification of science and spirituality. And natural law is that bridge and unification, because it is a science of how to understand what the aggregate consequences of an entire society's behavior will be if certain behaviors are chosen and then performed. Okay. And that's the disconnect. The disconnect in learning and understanding in people's minds is they don't understand that if a society behaves a certain way and condones that behavior in perpetuity, that society is inexorably being led toward a system of enslavement. Mm-hmm. Okay. If we are living a life and condoning other people's living of their lives in which they are violating other people's rights and property. If we live in harmony with those laws of right and wrong, then we're building a society that's moving toward real freedom. Yes.
These are the real four horsemen of the apocalypse, licentiousness and lack of morality and all of these other psychological things that actually play out throughout history. Every single empire that have ever fallen has had a lack of morality at that point. That's what caused them to fall into chaos.
Of course. Those four horsemen you're talking about are ignorance, apathy, laziness, and cowardice. They're the destroyers of the true trinity of consciousness, which is our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions. Ignorance destroys our thoughts, apathy destroys our emotions, and laziness and cowardice destroys our actions. You know, that's what we have to build up through a true system of initiation and inner work. That's this shadow work that this show is referring to. And, you know, briefly, I'd like to list what the ancient mystery school traditions looked at as the initiatory steps or the very tenets of initiation into the light of truth, into what they considered were the teachings of true morality and the teachings of the laws of the universe. Okay, the initiates had to be prepared to do five things. It was a fivefold process, and this was like a joining or a blending between this fivefold stepwise process of initiation, and it combined it with the five senses. So it was like a mirroring of the five senses of the individual. And the first step, as we've already really discussed earlier on in the show, was to stop lying. And this means stop all lying. Just don't lie, period. Tell the truth, okay, at all times. If it is in any way within your power, if you know, then speak the truth. Okay.
If I can add on to that, Jordan Peterson identified that in a world that is going chaotic, if you simply speak the truth, or at the very least don't lie, it'll stop chaos from growing and spreading, and it'll nest over time eventually impose order. So what's number two?
Well, there's more to number one, but to tack on to what you just said with what Jordan Peterson says, you know, you're not only just looked at, it can not only stop that chaos, but you got to think you can also be looked at as a rebel or even an insane person because of how much in the realm of constructural fantasy most of the world has descended. You know, to a person who is really speaking the truth, to other people who are living a life that is based on lies and based on deceptions and pure ignorance, someone who is in harmony with truth and is actively talking about that with whoever will listen can almost seem crazy or odd to the people who are still trapped in the illusory world of fantasy. you know, and they think their world is the truth and is what's normal, and they think anybody who contradicts that that received reality that they're dwelling in on a daily basis is absolutely out of their mind. You know, they'll call the sane person the insane person when they're living in an insane life. You know, so, you know, part of telling the truth is boldness and courage. You have to stand within that truth, no matter what it means you're going to receive by the rest of society. But the second part of stop lying was the connotation of stop lying was especially stop lying to yourself. Because if you are telling yourself lies about what's going on within you and in the world around you, okay, you cannot be honest with anybody else. So you can never truly tell the truth to anybody else if you're in a state of delusion and lying to oneself, okay? If you're trying to shelter yourself from the reality around you, okay? So we have to stop lying to ourselves about what is really going on. Now, the second step is almost a mirror image of stop lying, okay? And some people almost think it's identical, but it's slightly different, okay? So stop lying implies don't try to say that the world is a way other than what it is, okay? But stop dreaming means stop believing – that's step two, is stop dreaming. And this doesn't mean like daydreaming or like imagining how things could be. It means stop dwelling in cognitive dissonance, okay? Psychological cognitive dissonance. It means stop telling yourself that the world is some way that you would prefer to see it instead of actually as it is, okay? So – this means we stop engaging in magical thinking, in seeing the world through rose-colored glasses, in ignoring the negative aspects of our reality because we are too uncomfortable in engaging those aspects. And that is also about stop dreaming that you're some person that you are not. Look at yourself from an honest perspective. Stop lying to yourself about what you see. Stop dreaming that you are something that you are not, you have characteristics that you are not, and just be honest with yourself about what's really there. Okay, so these two aspects go hand in hand. Stop lying, which means stop telling untruths about the reality that you are is actually there, and stop dreaming means stop engaging in wishful magical thinking about, you know, picturing the world some way that it is not, but believing it is that way because you're more comfortable with believing it's that way than accepting that it really is an entirely different way.
And for those who would argue about that not dreaming thing, we're not talking about when you have an idea in your head that exists outside of time and space, comes in fifth dimensional consciousness. You don't know what that idea is until you spend your fourth dimensional time working on it in a three dimensional universe to will it into reality so that it actually fucking exists and actually affects the world around you. That's what you're here to do, to make your dreams reality. So when we say stop dreaming, it means stop leaving your dreams up there. You've got to pull them down by using your time and effort in a three-dimensional goddamn space. And I wish people would understand that.
Yeah. That's what we're here to do, is to become conscious co-creators of our shared reality. And we're going to get to that bringing into physical manifestation in the last step as we move forward through this initiatory process. The third step of initiation was learn how to think or how to discover truth. Okay, so they taught a scientific methodology of truth discovery in the ancient world and the ancient educational methods that was referred to as the trivium process, the trivium educational process. This was a process of knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. It has become called in some more modern mystery tradition schools of thought. It's been called grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Okay, so it's a threefold process. Okay, I like to look at it as I like to compare these three steps, knowledge, understanding, and wisdom, or grammar, logic, rhetoric, in a modern, almost technological aspect of input, processing and output. It makes it easy for people to understand the process. See, the grammar or knowledge stage is the input into, like, let's say a computer or us as a biological computer. You have to gather all the different pieces of data that you need. Okay, you have to assemble this vast database of information from an eclectic variety of sources. Okay, so you have all of the information that you need, okay, to understand or make sense of anything. And then you go to the second phase. Okay, so the first stage is information gathering for input.
Can I define that?
You've got to get yes.
First day of journalism school, ladies and gentlemen, the questions you asked in order to do all your information gathering and to back everything up with at least three sources: who, what, when, where, why, and how. You ask those questions, you have all the facts of the matter, then you can start wondering about the motives and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. Your logic comes after your grammar.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So the logic step or the understanding step means that you have now, or you're processing that information to try to come to an understanding of what it means. Okay, so just having the knowledge set, the data set, doesn't necessarily mean that you're making any sense of it. That's just like feeding a whole lot of data into a computer. But then you have to perform analytical transforms in the logical process of mind to come to understand what it actually means. And then you've grasped an understanding of it. Okay, so that's step two. Then once you understand what all of that data means, you're probably going to come upon some profound realizations and realize that it's useless just me understanding this, okay, or just a small group of people understanding it. Then you have to go into the spreading of that knowledge stage. And that was the rhetoric stage, or the wisdom stage, because wisdom is what we do with what we know, and it's acting properly upon what we know. So this is the output stage, if you're looking at it from the technological perspective. We have to share it out there with others in our world.
So the three stages of that are essentially learn, understand, spread.
That's it. Very simple. That's exactly right. And this was the process of actually how to think and how to discover truth and then do something with it. So that was step three of the ancient initiatory schools of occultic thought, was you have to stop lying, stop dreaming, learn how to think and how to discover truth through the trivium process. The threefold pathway, that's what trivium actually means, the three roads, okay, the three ways or three methods of truth discovery. The fourth step of occult initiation was live in the present moment. Be here now. Don't live your life for regret over the past. Don't live your life in anxiety over the future or the wish of a better life in the hereafter, whatever that may be. Okay? What you have to live for is what you are trying to accomplish in the here and now. And you work in a focused state. You work in a driven state to accomplish something better, because we recognize that we're not what we should, where we should be. We're not who we should be. Okay, we are not free. Okay, you need to live in the present moment because you need to understand who we are, where we are really at in consciousness, what the human condition legitimately really is, and not lie to ourselves about that. And that starts by engaging the present moment. It starts by being comfortable to be at one with your own thoughts and your own inner aspects of your personality. Okay, living in the present moment awareness was one of the biggest parts of the initiatory traditions in the ancient world, still should be in the initiatory traditions of the modern world. And this is brought about by learning some form of meditative practice. Okay, because you have to learn how to quiet the mind and center yourself in the moment to be present, to actually do the work that is going to be required of us to do, both upon ourselves and in the sharing of the knowledge that we gather with those who are around us who are still deficient in that knowledge and understanding. We have to spread it to other people. That is what the great work actually is.
Mm. It comes down to this point where you have that obligation, essentially. Once you know the truth, you have to spread the truth. And it's interesting, though, how religion, or the New World Order in general, has sort of hijacked a lot of these principles. And it just says, if you Google the one truth, ladies and gentlemen, like somebody was on Facebook or whatever, Vinny, you don't know the one truth. You don't know. And it was just like, well, hold on a second. One truth. Okay, press enter. What comes up here? A whole bunch of religious websites, all claiming to have the one truth and all disagreeing about what that one truth is. And then a few years later, I was interviewing Dr. Leonard Caldwell, and he was telling me this story about how he discovered something really amazing, and he figured it out before anybody else did, and then he figured he had to share that knowledge, and he started healing a lot of people and helping them get over their cancer, and then he got shut down and attacked, but then he kept coming back and he kept spreading the knowledge, that kind of thing. And I said to him, you know, it's interesting because almost every single person that I have on my show who has actually done something in their life has almost the identical story. And he says, that's because it's the one truth. The one truth all men and women must go through and discover for themselves. What is your place? How are you contributing? Do you even care? And if not, are you wasting your goddamn time on this plane of existence? And indeed, wasting the time of every single other person on this plane of existence by getting in their fucking way.
That's pretty powerful. You know, as funny as that can sound, that's very, very powerful because, you know, that is the reality of the state in which we live. I mean, what are people doing? You know, I did an entire show actually yesterday, my second video show back to live broadcasting on my website, What on Earth is Happening? And, you know, that was my topic. My topic was, what are people actually doing themselves to make a contribution to the work of waking humanity up to the condition of human slavery, you know? And this is demonstrable stuff. This isn't like, you know, floating some ideas out there to family and friends. I mean, what do you really have to show for it as far as, you know, contribution to media that's going to be preserved for any length of time is concerned? And so few people are even doing work like that, Vinny, because people aren't even technologically literate enough to do something like a show like this or put a presentation together or even a word processing document. You know, this is how technologically illiterate a lot of the people of the world are. And it's because cell phones have supplanted the creative devices of desktop computers, powerful desktop computers. People almost don't even buy anymore because they just have their phones and tablets and they think that's all they need. And they're not making anything creative. They're not doing any creative work on those consumer devices. They're just taking in information that other people have built and probably at that from very bad sources, okay, and deceptive sources. And they're not creating content for other people to understand, you know, what they have even come to understand, even if it is just one aspect of the truth, okay? So this is what I encourage people to do. We have to stop, like, pointing fingers at other people and saying, you should do this differently, you should do that differently, you should talk about what I want you to talk about. Get out there and do that work yourself. Build your own website. Start your own YouTube channel. Start your own radio show, you know? Get the word out there by creating media and putting it out there for other people to take in instead of worrying about what other people are doing, you know?
You said during your first broadcast that you actually wanted to do a series actually showing people these technical skills and things
like that. Yeah, I'm going to.
I've been thinking about doing that as well because it's just like, you know how we've been interviewing people for so many years and talking for so many years, and part of the practice of what we're actually doing is taking what we know and applying it in the real world. And indeed, right. The next step in our work is applying what we know in the technological sense and being able to compress it into a very short enough, easy to understand videos so that those people like us who are listening to our content, who are watching us, would actually rather much have us as their tutors and mentors in how to make their own shit than any other random YouTuber who doesn't understand the very reason, the purpose. Like, it reminded me, bro, of why I should be doing it,
you know?
Yeah, it reminded me of my first co-host of the Vinny Eastwood show, and my only co-host of the Vinny Eastwood show, didn't even last 8 months or anything like that before he started asking to be paid for doing it. He was, I need $1,000 a week. It's just like we've been in alternative talk radio in 2010 and 9 for like 8 yep. months, and he wants yep. to be paid for it. Right. It's like, right. are you freaking
kidding
me?
I still don't make that much a week, you know? if I ever make that much a week, I'm doing really well that week, you know? It's like, I mean, you know, people think that this is such a job that people do because we are showered with gifts or something like that. Believe me, this is no rewarded, highly rewarded work, okay? We struggle to get by, to just make ends meet. You know,
if I and, may, the yeah. reason why our work isn't that greatly rewarded, like, let me just put that back there. But green screen, my microphone, the computer, everything that I've got in my thing was donated. Essentially, everything I own was donated. So there are rewards for it. But there's yeah. a difference between doing the right thing so that other people are empowered and they don't need you anymore. You know, it's like selling someone the machine, but keeping the fuel for yourself so they always have to keep coming back to keep getting that. No, 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 no. This is why I do the show, ladies and gentlemen. One reason alone. You. That one person who's listening to the show right now, who just at this particular point or at any point during the broadcast, you thought to yourself, shit, they're actually right. I do have to get off my ass and I do actually have to do something. And you immediately turn off the broadcast. At that point, whatever point it is, even if it's 15 minutes into the broadcast, you stop it. And then you start immediately working on whatever the fuck dream it is that you've got. And you start willing that shit into reality. That is why I do the show for you. Okay?
That's right. Don't Period. Wait for orders from headquarters. Don't wait for orders from us. There aren't any orders coming from us. We don't want to order anybody. Okay? Just get involved and start doing the work. That's it. That's all there is to do. There's nothing to it but to do it, as the old saying goes. It's just getting your hands in there and, you know, get them dirty, you know, and make mistakes. You know, people are so afraid to start because they're so damn afraid of making mistakes, Vinny. You know, that's the big thing that you hear over and over. Well, I wouldn't know how to do this. Well, did we know exactly how to do it as soon as we started?
No,
you know,
no.
It's called practice. It's called getting better than you were yesterday.
Well, it's
you
funny.
Know, that's who we should be competing with, ourselves from yesterday.
I was tutoring you know? one of my people, and I said, okay, here's the approach of doing your first radio show. Deliberately fuck up as much as you possibly can, all right? That's the goal here, is to do it terrible as you could possibly make it. And then
you'll know what not to do.
Exactly. You know? Not only that, but you'll see a really vast improvement in the second show you do, and you'll be like, wow, I made that much improvement in such a short time.
Right.
And then you'll actually be encouraged. If you encourage people to make mistakes, they become encouraged to learn from those mistakes, and they learn so much more than you could just rhetoric into their face.
Yeah, that's how you build confidence. You know, nobody had confidence the first time they did something, you know. You build confidence by repetition. You do it over and over again. You get familiar with it. You make mistakes. You learn from the mistakes. Then you do better. And then you have confidence. And then that's a snowballing process. It just builds upon itself. You know, it's not as hard as people make it out to be. The hardest part is starting. You know, because that's where the courage is really needed. You know, you have to have courage to start because you can't be afraid of making a mistake. You have to accept mistakes are going to be made. They're going to happen, you know. And, you know, this leads us into this final step of occult initiation, which is all about the action. Okay. It's right in the first word of this five-step process, and that's activate the physical body. This means do what you are going to do in the 3D world. Don't leave it in the constructural realm of the imagination, but bring it into the realm of manifestation, the manifested 3D reality in which we live. And you have to do that with the body. We are doing everything we are doing ultimately with the body, okay? Typing in to the keyboard, you know, using the mouse, using software, building interfaces, building websites. Ultimately, we input all of that into the computer through ourselves. It didn't come just out of the ether. It came from out of us, you know, from the knowledge that we have taken in, you know. And you have to activate the physical body in another way, not just in that mental way to bring this knowledge into the physical world and spread it to others, but you have to activate it in the actual bodily sense of being healthy, okay, of eating right, being healthy, okay, being vigorous energetically, so that then if you are required to physically deal with violent problems of violence in the world, you're going to be in a state in which you are going to be strong enough to do that. And that may very well be required. We don't know. We are trying to avoid that. This is what we are trying to avoid by teaching the truth of morality to people. But if it is necessary, you have to be physically prepared for it. That's not fear-mongering. That's called practically applying what we know may be an eventuality. And if you're smart, you're going to prepare for every eventuality, including if things have to go into the physical realm, as far as rebellion goes, okay, or just defense goes, okay? So the body is an important part of that and should never be negated. It should never be put on the back burner or looked at as inferior to the spiritual aspects of ourselves. They have to be in a state of balance and unity.
Now, I've been reading through it, an older Facebook thing is about that fear and bravery concept. You know how that fear stops people from getting out there and doing that thing. And one of my listeners was complimenting that thing. He says, "Oh, Vinny, you're so brave." And I say, "It's not actually out of fear that I share and not bravery. It's actually fear of getting exterminated. That's the reason why I do what I do. You know, I'm afraid of getting exterminated. It's on my bucket list and I hope to do it one day, but I'm going to procrastinate on that as much as I can. You know, see, I'm more reckless and arrogant than brave. I just haven't seen any real-world consequences for my actions yet. No stalkers, no hackers, no agents, nothing. It's not bravery unless there's actually something to be afraid of. What I do doesn't qualify. That's why I get people on my show who actually do put themselves in danger so that others might learn without having to do it the hard way. And ladies and gentlemen, if there's anything as simple as watching, sharing, or liking and subscribing, I'd be very grateful, because everyone does what they can, and just because some appear to be doing more than others, it doesn't mean they're doing it alone. Everybody contributes.
That's right. And support is so important. But to go, you know, I mean, it's what keeps us being able to do work like this. You know, you were talking about donations before, and it's so great that, you know, both for your show and for my show, equipment was donated in huge amounts. And this is like so incredibly empowering and appreciated, you know, because we wouldn't be able to do this without this technological equipment. You know, this is an extension of ourselves, really. And, you know, that's technology being used for the right reasons and being shared and donated for the right reasons. And when we do that, when we then put the word out and share more, then, you know, that support will be there. It will come. You know, that's proof of natural law. You know, it's like when we are doing the right things, good things will happen, and we will be given the support that we need. Not any more than that to live any kind of an extravagant lifestyle, but we will have the resources that we need to reach the people that we need to reach, you know. And, you know, this aspect that you were speaking about, just bravery and courage, you know, I do what I do. People will also say, "Oh, you're brave for doing this." And it's like, I do what I do because I don't want to face the consequences of myself knowing that I didn't do what I needed to be doing from a moral point of view. It's not even fear of anything outside of myself. It's like, you know, the fear that will motivate me is like, I'd have to live with myself knowing that I didn't try to do my best to put the word out knowing what I know. You know, that motivates me more than anything else.
I don't have an excuse. I don't have an excuse on that one, because I have panic attacks when I go to job interviews and things like that, which first happened to me when I got busted by the cops for cannabis. So I can't work. I can't get a benefit. I'm not mentally ill, and I can't work for the government either. All right. I'm not here by choice, ladies and gentlemen.
Backed into a corner. It's how it often very much feels, you know, like there really isn't a choice. It's like when you understand about what's really going on in the world, you're going to feel a moral obligatory pressure to share it. It really does become an obligation and a weight upon us that we have to put that out there back into the world. And again, that's the rhetoric stage of the trivium. That's the output that we ultimately have to do to share our learnings. And that's what's going to basically put the information information out there for others to then learn. And then maybe the process will be easier for them. You know, as it, you could make the argument, it's been easier for us compared to those who came before us. The laborious work that others had to do to keep this knowledge in the world so that we could learn it. We had it easy. You know, maybe we'll make it easier and more accelerated for others who come after us. That's one of my goals anyway.
Well, the Greeks have a saying that your goal in life is to plant a tree whose shade you know you shall never get to sit beneath. To think of not your children, but those that are yet to be born. If you think like that, every action you take will do good not now, but in 100 years. From now to 100 years, good will be done because of your actions right here, right now. That's how important it is to know what you're talking about, to know what your frickin' purpose is. Imagine how depressing it would be if you, oh, I don't have a purpose. You know, in fact, I was, this is a funny story, bro. I was at a New Year's Eve party, you know, my mate was shagging one of the chicks, and like, what if this guy asked me, you know, what do you do for a living, Vinny? And I say, well, I'm a talk radio show host, I'm the executive producer of American Freedom Radio, and I'm the webmaster of the Legalized Cannabis Party, and the lead singer of Vinny and the Vendettas. And he goes, oh, but I mean, like, what do you do for a job?
Yeah, because that's all that has any real value, right? If you get paid, can't have any value if you're not getting paid, right? Yeah. That's the measure of everything.
Oh, my God.
To people like that. Yeah.
It was just funny, you know. Other people get offended and angry at that, but I just thought it was freaking hilarious. And it only occurred to me in retrospect, like, it just occurred to me, like, yesterday morning, and it was just like, that happened, like, nearly a month ago, that incident. It just came to me while I was in the shower or something like that. You know, when random thoughts came to you, and when you're just doing something, and they're like, oh, my God, that's good. I've got to put that out there, or something of that nature. There we go. Favor returned. Yeah.
Just wasn't a long enough list for him, you know what I mean? I don't know what he was expecting. But, you know, it goes to the whole sense of purpose that you're discussing, you know? This is what people have to come to understand. That's really the goal of the shadow work upon ourselves, is to discover what we are here to do, what our dharma is, as how the Eastern traditions called it. What is our work here for us to do? You know, and there's nothing more fulfilling than learning what that is and then getting involved in actually doing it and making it happen. You know, that's the building of the soul, as far as I'm concerned. You know, that's work upon the soul. And too few people are actively engaged in it. That's the problem. You know, people are wandering aimlessly, going from one pleasure pursuit to the next, to the next. And again, there's nothing wrong with having pleasure in one's life, you know, or even occasionally taking some time to selfishly indulge in it.
This gives me a point. The Hollywood people and the porn stars and all of these people who indulge in pleasure at such a massive, massive level for extended periods of time, if anybody actually wanted to ever get into those industries, all they have to do is investigate the lives of any of those people and see how bloody hard it is and how terrible their relationships are, how many breakups they have, how shallow they actually are in real life and all of this kind of stuff. And then you start to realize something. Your dreams of being a film director or an actress or a singer or anything like that were illusions created by dark sorcerers. Those were your dreams, ladies and gentlemen. All right? And
they're never going to lead to true personal fulfillment.
Yeah, that's right. To quote Neverending Story again, the nothing was about destroying Fantasia, and Fantasia was human imagination. Imagination is what you aspire to, what currently doesn't exist, which you can will into three-dimensional reality. And Atreyu asked the dark creature Gamork why you would destroy Fantasia. And he said, because Fantasia gives people hope. And people without hope are easier to control.
Amazing. You know, that's exactly it. And that's why the beginning of the real solution has to be the human imagination. We have to be able to envision a different state than what we are currently living in, to even understand that we can bring it into existence through an act of our will and our own behavior in the 3D world. That's what this alignment to true purpose is, because ultimately the alignment to the true purpose or the true will is alignment with the will of creation. It's bringing our behavior into alignment with creation's will. We have to see, again, to go back to the theme, shadow work. What is the purpose of doing personal introspection, meditation, contemplative efforts, even concentrating, learning how to really deeply focus our will, okay? Doing this type of work is ultimately about trying to get us to an understanding of the answer to the question of what does the universe want? We are always constantly thinking, what do we want? What do we want? Even what do we want as a species as far as like freedom or the goals of an entire society?
Hold on, Mark,
concerned.
There's a little crackle on the line there. Okay. Maybe just yank your cord out and just plug it back in again. That should work it.
Can you hear me?
Yep. And then just plug the USB back in and then it should be right.
All right. How's that sound?
Beautiful. Perfect. Great. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. we always think about what we want, even at what we, the collective, we as a species want, okay? But what I would suggest is that part of the introspective work we need to do is to basically extrapolate from, a pure consciousness by delving into, again, meditative contemplative states. What does the universe want? Is the universe really trying to move itself in a certain direction? Does it want to create certain states of consciousness and awareness or states of being as opposed to others? And I would say, having done this and many other individuals having done this to attempt to answer that question, yes, the universe has certain specific goals in mind. It wants to create more complexity, not less complexity. It wants more undifferentiation, meaning more uniqueness. It doesn't want novelty and habit and it wants more differentiation. It doesn't want undifferentiation, okay? It wants a differentiated, unique aspects to come into existence, okay? It wants to build more unique things, okay? It wants a state of existence that is based in freedom and morality. It doesn't want a state of controlled, stifling of consciousness and holding consciousness down. Okay, it wants to expand awareness and consciousness. It wants more knowledge and awareness. Okay, and if we align ourselves, our own individuated units of consciousness called the self, okay, the lower self, okay, me as this living being that's experiencing myself through the body of Mark Passio, okay, this lens that called, the individual. If we align our will or our goals to the goals of what creation is attempting to accomplish, we will see that our lives unfold in a completely different way than they would have if we stay in the selfish modality of consciousness, only trying to serve ourselves in the 3D world and who we think we are in this limited sense of, I'm this person doing this job and making this amount of money so I could have this type of lifestyle. Okay, if we stop seeing all of our goals and having intentions only to serve these selfish goals, and we try to align our behavior and make the goal of our life what the universe ultimately is attempting to create and the direction that it wants to move everything, we are going to see that our lives will unfold in absolutely practically miraculous ways. It will open up avenues of understanding unto us. It will actually help us to accomplish what we are trying to accomplish if we align our goals to the goal of creation itself. And that's what should be the ultimate life purpose or goal of people who are seeking to really change the world for the better. We have to understand there's a reason that there are certain states and things that are more advantageous and more preferred by creation itself. You know, so we understand those things by going into these contemplative or meditative states. We're going to not only understand more about how the natural world works, we're going to understand more about ourselves, and then put ourselves in a position where we can actually align our behavior to what that greater consciousness wants.
Yeah, it's a lot. You can swim a lot faster if you're not swimming against the currents of the universe, essentially.
That's right. That's right. You know, the idea is the universe will come to our assistance if we align ourselves with its goals, not just our own selfish goals. You know, that's how I would put it. It'll make life easier for us. We will be swimming in the slipstream of the direction of universal consciousness, as opposed to trying to, you know, as you say, swim against that flow or that current.
It comes down to this kind of choice, right? And everybody talks about, oh, I chose to do this, and you know, nobody's better than anybody else. And I said, that's absolute bullshit. You can take any two people in the world and you could actually compare them objectively, and you say, actually, one person is better than the other. Well, how can you say that? How can you say that? Well, this guy over here is a fireman. He saved two children and a woman from a burning building at the risk of his own life. And this guy over here isn't the arsonist who set the building on fire. All right. There's two clear distinctions between who has value in that situation versus who has slightly less value. It doesn't mean he's not human and he doesn't have any rights anymore or not a right to a fair trial. It just means that objectively he's worth less to society, not because society deems it, but because he and his own actions have deemed it.
That's where, like, these leftist and social justice warriors, you know, who want to define equality as everybody being the same, have made a very serious miscalculation. It isn't about everybody being the same or thinking the same. It's about people being equal in rights. You know, this when we talk about equality, we're talking about equality under natural rights, meaning we all have the same rights. We can all do the same behaviors as long as they're not causing harm to other beings. Okay, but it doesn't mean that we're all the same in our characteristics and capabilities. You know. Nothing could be further from the truth. That would mean everybody would basically be the same person, you know, and that, then it would be a very boring world. So, you know, talking about equality is not the same as talking about sameness. And that's what too few people make the distinction. You know, they don't distinguish the two.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also the other point on that is that we're not good enough as we are. All right. As good as you or I are at what we do, Mark, we're not good enough yet. You know, I mean, have we overthrown the New World Order yet? You know, have
exactly.
we, I mean, are people coming en masse and throwing out the masters and hanging them in the streets and things right. like that after being given a fair trial so that their poisonous scumbaggery and progeny won't toxify the landscape of human consciousness ever again throughout eternity? Has that happened? No, it hasn't happened yet. All right. And that's
hasn't been accomplished. So there's room for improvement
exactly.
upon everything that we do. Sure.
Yeah.
And anything that can be done can be improved upon, you know, and we have to be humble in that respect and understand, yeah, you know, that's what this whole new format that I have put together is all about. I recognize with what I was doing with the original audio podcast series, you know, and radio show, well, I could do this better. You know, there's ways of, you know, making the visuals better. There's taking it into the realm of video, which is going to have more of an impact, you know, building better slide presentations, et cetera. You know, and the software that I'm using to do it, I'm very happy with the production team I put together. They're doing a phenomenal job. You know, but of course, there's always room for improvement. There's going to be mistakes. We're learning as we go. You know, and that's you just have to shed the fear of doing that, acknowledge mistakes are going to happen, you know, and you just keep moving on. You pick yourself up, you move on, you do better the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're talking about shame there for a bit. And while you were talking about shame, I was just sort of like, I was just remembering so many times when I've just gotten really, really high, and then I'll think to myself something I did when I was like 25 or like something when I was 14 or something that was stupid or dishonest or something that actually made me feel bad about myself. And instead of feeling good that I'm not that stupid, not that abrasive, or not that inept anymore, I feel bad that I was once upon a time. And I don't understand that. Why do I feel ashamed of things that I should have, you know, gone over and don't replicate anymore? I don't understand that. Is it to remind me to never do it again? And that's the reason why bad memories are very, very hard to forget. Good memories you have to create every day, because you forget them so quickly.
That's right. They surface easily many times because it is a reminder. You could potentially slip back into that modality of consciousness, and you're doing that in your Rolodex of memories to remind yourself, I don't want to ever be like that again. You know, and it's like we have to make the decision every day not to revert and go back to old habits or old ways that are not as optimal as what we're doing now, you know. And then tomorrow we have to make the decision, I'm going to do better than I'm doing today, you know. So, you know, it's a continual refinement of effort. And this is another thing many people fear, believe it or not. You know, they realize, well, when's it that people want this immediate gratification thing of like, when is it done? When's it done? You know, well, that process of improving self is never done. You know, we may accomplish goals in the 3D world, like I'm going to get a new show on the air, or I'm going to build this presentation, or even we're going to become free and not have masters. You know, that's achievable and doable. Does that mean that the journey ends? Of course not. It never ends. You know, there will be new challenges to face. There will be new problems to solve. It never ends. It goes on and on and on. That's the whole process of life and the refinement of it, you know, of consciousness. Mm. And a lot of people fear that. They fear that as much as they fear death, because it's infinite in both directions. It's like the things have no beginning and they have no end. It's infinite. You know, consciousness goes on and on and on, and just changes to different, you know, states of energy and awareness. And, you know, that's a, you know, eternity is a scary thing for people to comprehend. You know, it's like it's even more scary than the concept that maybe death might be the cessation of consciousness for eternity for most people. You know, that consciousness is eternal in both directions, you know, and has no beginning and end. That's a scary thought for a lot of people, that there is no ability to destroy consciousness. You know, people don't want to even consider that notion. You know, they don't even want to look at that, because it's like, well, we're never really going anywhere. We're never getting, quote, out of this until we get the lessons that are here to be learned and integrated into our own consciousness. And then we take that consciousness into the wider universe. You know, so these are the kind of things people have to sit and contemplate. And it's all about their relationship with themselves. We can't have any true relationship with anyone else until we develop a true relationship with ourselves. And we can't develop a true relationship with ourselves until we have developed a relationship with truth. You know, and all real relationships that are truly genuine and are going to operate in a very positive way are going to have individuals in them, regardless of how many individuals are in the relationship, that are connected to truth. And that's why we need a better relationship in all of society, among all of its members, because we have to have individuals in our society that have a connection to truth and principles and morals first and foremost. Then we can establish genuine and positive relationships with others in our society.
Yeah, and I have an anecdote to illustrate that point. We were coming out of the Big Day Out, big music festival here in Auckland. It was quite a few years ago, actually, nearly 10 years ago. And we were with my mate Josh and his girlfriend Stacey. And you know, at music festivals, there are hot women everywhere. It's ridiculous. Oh my God, there's another. They're everywhere. And then I went up to my wife. You know, we'd been there all day, all night, and we were going home and stuff like that. And I went up to my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, and I said, you know, baby, I've seen so many hot women at this festival today that I'm done. Like, I can't even be bothered looking at them anymore. You know, it's enough. And then her friend Stacy comes up to me and she goes, "Oh my God, I can't believe you said that," or something like that to your girlfriend. And I turned around and I said, "Well, you obviously haven't had an honest relationship." And it turns out that her boyfriend was cheating on her. Wow. It was just totally illustrated my point.
She couldn't even conceive that you would make a statement about your honesty regarding that to your, you know, the person you were in a relationship with.
I bleed red. You know, yeah, what's a man going to do? and that's the thing.
But I guess she would prefer to have that hidden. Like, she would prefer not for her significant other to be honest with her about feelings like that.
She checked his phone, and she knew he was cheating on her. And she still didn't approach him with it or break it up or anything like that. Such is the cowardice of our society and representations like this in everyday
fear
morality.
Fear of confrontation. Yeah. You know, fear of confrontation, yeah.
Fear of doing what's right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's okay to be afraid of doing what's right. Bravery is not a lack of fear. Bravery is an acceptance of fear and doing the right thing anyway.
In spite of it. That's right. Doing the right thing in spite of your fears of doing it. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell people I don't not have fears. I have fears, but I choose to do what I understand to be the right thing in spite of that fear actively being present. And you're doing it anyway. Exactly. I mean, that's what real courage is, you know. Real courage isn't just rampant fearlessness and just rushing in and doing whatever. It's confronting the fear that is present within oneself and saying, "I understand this. It's here. I acknowledge it. I acknowledge its presence. And yet I'm going to act in the right way regardless of that fear being present." Yeah.
One of the things you said in one of your presentations was that natural law is a principle that exists now and forever and always from this end of the universe to the other at all times. Whatever is true now is always true. And the way that you boil that down is there's only two people in the world. Okay. You want to smoke weed and the other guy says, no, you can't. But there's only two of you. And you just say, fuck you. Okay. Because that's not right. That kind of thing. You've got no right to keep anybody away from doing anything. But if somebody's trying to kill the other guy and you say that's not right, oh, obviously, you know, somebody's trying to steal that guy's stuff. Oh, obviously. And I was watching this movie Annihilation, and there's this bit where this bear comes and attacks these women and stuff like that. And instead of trying to, you know, kind of save the other people, this woman had kidnapped these girls, right? Instead of trying to save them or whatever, just tried to save herself and then wound up getting herself killed in the process. That kind of thing. It's almost like the caveman days. Okay, this is your moral obligation, ladies and gentlemen. Compress the world to this. You are in a cave. Your missus and your children are in that cave. There is a bear at the entrance of the cave threatening to come in and kill all of you. It doesn't matter how afraid you are. You must charge forth with your spear and try to kill it. That is your obligation. No matter how afraid you are, no matter how much risk it puts you in, because the risk you are put in is there anyway. And the risk for everybody else will exist if you do not act.
That's right. Sometimes it's more dangerous not to act than to act. You know, people think, "Oh, I'll be spared." No, you'll just be, fed to the beast at possibly a slightly later time. That's all. You know, nobody's going to be spared in this system of evil and iniquity that we are ensconced in. You know, there it doesn't spare anyone. So it will just because it hasn't gotten to a particular individual or group of individuals yet doesn't mean it isn't coming. Okay, because it wants everything, and it wants the soul of everyone is ultimately what this thing wants. Okay, this whole system wants. So we have to act now. You know, there is no time like the present. Don't wait for orders from headquarters. Get involved in the spiritual and moral battle that is before us, and put the information that people need to see and hear out into the world. That's what the great work is to do. And so few people are loath to do it because of this fear. It's the fear of self, ultimately. It's a fear of, you know, what do I have to change in myself, and how do I have to change my motivations about what I want out of life, for what I want my life to be. Okay. And, you know, there is a legitimate concern or fear there in people's minds because it is a level of sacrifice. I mean, you know, just take, for example, you or I, Vinny, we haven't done a lot of the things that we may have selfishly wanted to do with our lives or with our time because we've dedicated so much time to this effort. You know, there is a level of sacrifice, but we do that again because, as you talked about earlier, we are concerned with those who come after us. It's not just for us. It's for the whole human progeny. It's like if we don't act now and confront this evil now, who knows what life is going to be like for future generations if it's already getting this bad now, you know? And that moral obligation is what drives us. That moral responsibility, we feel it in our bone, in our blood and bones, you know? It's a very real palpable thing for us. And this is what other people have to develop. They have to develop that visceral sense of moral imperative that is before us all right now. They have to get in touch with that moral imperative, and they have to let it drive their behavior to do the right thing. And too few people are doing that because they're still in that state of fear. Once you start shedding the fear of what other people think about you, and you start shedding the fear of your own inadequacies, you know, because you're afraid of making mistakes, and you just get in there and start doing it, you'll find that all of the other fears that may go along with that activity start to drop away, because there's nothing that dispels fear more than familiarity and repetition. We don't fear things that we've done a million times. We know it. We see it. We associate it with something that we understand, and boom, we're comfortable with it because we've confronted it many times through repetition in our lives. Well, it's the same thing with getting involved in doing the work. You know, you just start doing it, and then you continue to do it, and then it becomes something that's familiar, and as it becomes familiar, it becomes easier to do. Again, that snowball effect, it works the same way with shedding fear of doing the work.
If I may, just come up to an important realization of how important you are, how important I am, how important almost every single activist who actually gets off their goddamn ass and makes sure to record things for future progeny and stuff like that to experience and gain from their thing. Because the great work doesn't just extend to the occult or to creating good comedy or anything like that. In all veins of teaching people in any way, whether you're teaching people plumbing or methodologies or creating new technologies for energy or right. Opposing vaccines or getting one. Everybody has their own great work to do, and they must do whatever it is that interests them most, because once you introduce a child or even an adult into something that interests them, you no longer have to sit on their shoulder going, come on, keep going, you'll be motivated, come on, keep right. going. Fuck that shit. Be inspired, ladies and gentlemen. That turns you into a wellspring. You are the fountain of life. And God damn it, you can bring a lot of life into this universe if only you just pull the plug out.
And see, that's what real education is, Vinny. It's letting the young really choose what they want because they're interested in it, and then explore and learn everything there is to learn about that. If that were the basis of our education system, we'd be turning out child prodigies, you know, instead of rigidly sitting them down in a classroom, preventing movement and talking and discussion, and firing uniform information at them that the state wants them to know or think that they know. Or the whole educational system in that sense needs radical reform, because children learn best when they are highly interested and motivated to learn about something that they really want to know about. And that's when they pick up that rein, you know, they pick up that ball and run with it. They take the reins and they go, you know, and that's why too few children are inspired. to self-educate, and they don't have that motivation, that fire lit underneath them by modern so-called educators, because they're not receiving real education. They're sitting in a government-controlled indoctrination camp, and then they're going to become, you know, a tired, spiritless people that are just going to obey and follow orders when they're older. You know, so that's so important to teach that lesson to our young. That's what conscious parenting is all about, and that's what real education is all about.
That's another thing I was wondering. One of the presenters, I'm not sure if it was a friend of mine, he introduced you as the living embodiment of fatherly love, you know, and that kind of thing. And I thought to myself, has Mark Persio yet done a presentation about child rearing? And that kind of thing. Wouldn't that be interesting, the Persio parenting model?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked a bit about conscious parenting in my work, not specific methodologies of child rearing, but, you know, it would be an interesting dynamic for a future show. Mm. But I very much try to emphasize the importance of being a conscious parent and opening up your child's mind at a very young age, and then helping them, being a mentor and a nurturer for them, to put them on a path that they are interested in what they are doing, and that they're self-motivated, that they become an autodidact, a self-learner, you know, a self-motivated learner. This is how I learned all the technological skills that I have. I never went to school for it, you know, and I came out in the professional world doing tech work, you know, just doing troubleshooting work for tech companies in the past, where I had no formal education, and yet I knew way more in the actual real world, in the field, than a lot of younger people who are coming out with computer science degrees did. And, you know, you ask them to do something in a real world situation, and they froze like deer in headlights, you know. And, you know, somebody with no formal education or no university-based education in computing, you know, was head of the technological division in some of the places that I worked. So,
is that not an indicator of how bad formal education is, you know?
Exactly. And then, you know, occasionally they'd be doing interviews with people who had these really impressive resumes. And, you know, the boss would sit them down and say, perform this task for me. I want to see how you handle this. And they would just, like, fail miserably at it. And it's like, if we hired this person, even though they have a resume, like, 10 times more impressive than someone like myself, like, we'd be, you know, the work would back up for, like, months, you know? And, you know, so it's like, this is where real-world practical application comes in. You can't leave it in the realm of theory. You have to understand something, but then you have to bring it back, boots on the ground, you know? Spirit in the flesh, as I like to call it. You have to get the work done in the real manifested physical domain. This is where this is where you apply all the learning, you know? And too few people understand that. They want to leave it in this hazy, pseudo-spiritual realm that's only in the mind and only in intentions, you know, and only in emotions. And this is about action. This is about taking real-world action. You know, it's not just about what we know. It's about what we do with it, you know, and then we have to teach that to others so then they can do something with it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we start doing that, we'll be making headway. When we start understanding this is about bringing it all into practical application in the very real physical world.
I had this discussion with one of my listeners. He came around to my house with a couple of beers, and I said to him, look, the thing is, if you've got knowledge that you do not use and will never use, that is the definition of useless knowledge, okay? So there are so many people who are sitting around watching documentary after documentary after documentary, listening to show after show after show after show. Ladies and gentlemen, start your own goddamn show. Make your own documentary. Seriously, turn us off. Seriously, it is more important to you that you turn off people who continue to teach things than it is to actually apply what they're actually teaching you. Okay,
Vinny, I know a few people, believe it or not, that I would say are knowledge peers when it comes to people like you or I, and are doing absolutely nothing with all of that knowledge that they have taken in. I know people that they could absolutely do the type of work that I do and share the knowledge that they've come to understand, and yet fear and physical things in the world that they desire more than to do the great work are holding them back. And I say that that is a place of like very deep and permanent woe. Okay. That is like a place that I would never want to be in. You know, that's like, that's real karmic consequence and debt being built up there as far as I'm concerned. Because to know and not to do is not only to not know really ultimately the material that you claim to know spiritually, but it is to be complicit. Staying silent is to be complicit with the system of control and evil that we find ourselves in. You know, I think the people who know and say nothing are going to be in a much worse position of karmic debt and consequence of the soul than people who just were ignorant and didn't know.
It was said within Dante's Inferno that there were X amount of levels to hell, and the lowest level of hell, the worst of them all, was served for those who betrayed, all right? Mm-hmm. To betray your friends. Just remember, ladies and gentlemen, your enemies cannot betray you, ever. It is only your right. friends who can do that. That's and right. that is where the deepest pits of hell they will wind up, allegedly, according to the story, right?
Sure. And it's shame-based consciousness, you know? You could look at that as that's a state of consciousness that exists right here in the here and now. You know, it's just a modality of consciousness that people dwell in. And that's why it's so difficult to get out of that state. And this is what we talk about shadow work, you know, to bring it all full circle. You know, we're talking about it's an allegorical thing. You could look at that story of hell as literally real, but it's actually teaching an allegorical lesson about a state of consciousness. And that state of consciousness that you referred to as betrayal of truth, betrayal of other people's, you know, freedom and rights, because you're doing nothing while they're being taken. And really, it's a state of consciousness that is shame, which is that one layer of consciousness that is like just right above just ceasing to exist. You know, it's the hardest one to come out of. And that's where the shadow work comes in. And you have to start that by being honest with yourself. You have to start that by getting out of that dreaming state of you wish the world to be the way you want it to be. You got to learn how to think and discover truth. You know, you have to be present in the here and now and find out what your work here is to do. And then you have to actually activate yourself and do it. You know, that's what it's all ultimately about. And you could find tools and methods along the way. You know, there's different meditative practices. There's different learning tools. You know, there's different motivational programs that can help drive you to get involved and do what you really want to do. You know, you could get involved in art and music and make, you know, do the work allegorically through those modalities. You know, you want to do it through writing, write books. You know, you want to do it through poetry. You know, there's no one medium for it. You know, you want to get involved and do podcasts or video shows, you could do that too. You know, there's no one way to do this work. It's up to you. You choose based on your strengths and your capabilities. You know, but the important part is to get out there and start doing it.
Mm, yeah, I remember one guy at a party, he comes up to me and he asked me, Vinny, you're doing what you were doing and stuff. I've known him for a few years and so what's your advice for me then? And I go, well, it depends, what do you enjoy doing? He goes, well, I like cooking and stuff. And I go, well, how many unhealthy people out there who would really need to know about nutrition and even basic culinary skills, bro? Do a fucking show. And right. He went and did one.
There you go.
Know? And that's just awesome. That kind
he,
of
oh
thing.
He wouldn't he but, wouldn't do it, you said?
No, he went and did it.
Oh, he did it. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, all that's right. It.
But that's the thing. I am a really good listener, and I'm also a very sharp thinker. So often when people come to me with their problems, if they want that problem solved, I'll give them a solution. And right. It might not always be the correct solution, but
it's a suggestion for them to get started and heading down the right path, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you can't force someone to walk through a doorway. They have to choose to right. walk through it. And on the other side of that doorway, they have no idea what is there. And ultimately, they're not going to enjoy being on the other side of that doorway if you push them through it, are they? You right. know, they're going to hate you for it. Like, for example, I hate the cop who lied to me and told me that if I was honest with the cops, they would go easy on me. I hate that guy. I especially hate the fact that he made up evidence after taking my full confession. But because I was so honest, they forgot to even advise me of my right to silence or anything like that. They didn't even obey their own technical protocol. So my entire admission of all of my guilt and all of my drug dealing history was struck off the record because I was honest, and they were so shocked by my honesty that they forgot to follow their own dishonest protocol.
Wow. Wow.
All right. Yo. Yo, how is that? Good, you know. I've since wised up, on the other hand, and my neck, and the, no, officer, I don't have any weed on me. you know, that kind of thing, as opposed to full confession, because that was quite a traumatic experience, and it's better to just not get into those situations in the first place, you know. However, I don't know about you, but there's always been those magical synchronistic times, like this one time at New Year's when we were smoking weed in this one of the central parks of Auckland, right? You know, and three cops suddenly coming down the hill toward us. We were like, oh, no. Oh, no. And then one of the cop goes, oh, hey, Vinny. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. How many cops do I know? It turns out, the cop whose autistic son that I was looking after really, really well for a part-time job back those years ago, it was him. They didn't search us. They just asked us to move on gently. And I took that as a sign from God himself to keep smoking weed. Mark Passio, thank you very much.
Vinny, thanks so much. Great questions, great interview. I hope your listening audience enjoys it, and thank you so much for inviting me back on. It was a pleasure.
We have to do it again sometime, but I also wanted to get maybe you, Max Egan, Luke Rudkowski, and some of these other things, but I also wanted to do an Elders roundtable or something like that with Jordan Maxwell and
awesome.
G. Edward Griffin and a couple of the Elders, right? So that we have.
Anytime you let me know, I'm in.
Oh, yeah. Because as soon as you get that many great minds together, it's just fucking magic, eh? Love that shit. That's what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you what. In fact, here's the challenge, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening to this broadcast and you want to see some goddamn magic, if you want to bring something fantastic into the ether, manifest an email at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com contact page, and you send me your dream team, three names that you want on a roundtable discussion on thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Three names of the highest caliber guests that you can get, and we'll try and get them all on at the same fucking time. How magic would that be, ladies and gentlemen? We'll give you full accreditation just so long as you give me money. Now, there's speaking of which, I wanted to ask, ladies and gentlemen, to please go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood. Like, go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, sign up for Patreon. Or if you are a New Zealander, and I do want to actually stress this to people, if you're doing the super chats and things like that in the chat, YouTube take a significant portion of the super chats, man. The vultures, like 40% or something like that. Some guy did a $10 super chat the other day, and I wound up getting $6, including all my other ad revenue for the day. Maybe getting $2 in ad revenue a day, ladies and gentlemen. All right? That is how little worth those ads really have. But if you do go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and you are a New Zealander, there's a Kiwi Bank number right there. Kiwi Bank takes 0%. There's also PayPal there. PayPal takes like maybe 5 or 10% or something like that. But the Patreon, maybe like 2.5%, something very little. So if you want to support me monthly, that'd be absolutely fantastic, ladies and gentlemen. And I am so grateful, and I have to remind myself every single show, and hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, I'll keep up this good record, to thank you. Thank you very much, all of your words of encouragement, every single penny you send me. You're going out there, you're slaving at fucking slave jobs, and you're trying to take care of your kids, and then you have the goodness and the decency to send me a buck a month or anything. That means a whole lot more than you think it means. To me, it does. To anybody who you support, who is trying to do the work. There is one truth, and there is the work. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is a singular, definite article, and you are supporting the genuine article right here in the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for doing so, and also make sure to support Mark Passio over at whatonearthishappening.com and americanfreedomradio.com. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Passio, final statement, sir, and then we'll sign off.
Well, Vinny, I think I'll leave by saying thank you to you for the work that you do. You've been a rock in the truth community for a number of years, and I hope it continues on for many years into the future. So thanks to those who do support us. The support is very heartfelt and much appreciated, and continue to tune in, to continue to listen and learn, and then get out there and put the truth out there for other people to learn from as well. That's what this is all about. It's about sharing this knowledge with others so that we can create a world based in voluntary cooperation and true freedom. So, Vinny, once again, thank you. Everybody, check out my website, whatonearthishappening.com, and we'll see you here again real soon, hopefully.
To share knowledge is to take action, and knowledge you do not use to take action is by definition useless knowledge. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you again sometime.